From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Two young white men perpetrated back-to-back mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio over the weekend, leaving a bloody trail of 31 people dead and scores injured. The shootings come just a week after a white supremacist shot and killed three people in Gilroy, California. While President Donald Trump explicitly called out racism, bigotry, and white supremacy in a 10-minute speech on Monday morning, he refused to take responsibility for fueling the hate that appears to be motivating a spike in white male shooters who leave rage-filled screeds online. Easily available military-style weapons of mass destruction, combined with racist toxic masculinity in our political culture, have become a deadly combination in Trump's America. We turn now to Stephen Gardiner, Assistant Research Director at Political Research Associates. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Thank you for having me on, Sonali.
How important were Trump's words on Monday morning? So far, he has sort of resisted using the terms racism or even white supremacy. On Monday, he explicitly used those terms.
Yes, I was happy to hear him say those words, but there's a certain embedded irony given the history of the way he talks to his base. So, yes, good for him that he can say those words, but he needs to go further. He needs to speak to his past rhetoric and, of course, to his policies, the policies of his administration.
Right. He didn't exactly take any sort of responsibility or connect any lines between the actions of especially the El Paso shooter, whose motive appears to be more clear, and his own words. He initially over the weekend suggested tying gun control measures to immigration reform, again, sort of saying this was something that Democrats should be doing with him. He didn't mention anything about gun control during his speech. And he was sort of AWOL over the weekend. He didn't really tweet for a long time. He was even sort of caught crashing a wedding of supporters. And on Monday, he even said Toledo instead of Dayton, got the name of a city wrong. It sounded to me and looked to me that he was just reading the words that someone else had written for him because his people told him he needs to say them.
I think that's correct. And I think this is, most of us have trouble speaking off the cuff, and this is clearly not Donald Trump's key message. It's not the message that he ran for office on, however incomplete and inadequate it was. It was clearly scripted, and it's not the sorts of things that he says when he's speaking from his heart.
In the actual speech that he gave, he also linked violent video games to the shooting. He certainly didn't address the fact that the online forum that the El Paso shooter posted his manifesto to is a place where his fans reign supreme, right?
Well, I mean, his fans, and in fact, on 8chan, the mm-hmm. place where the manifesto was posted, people who think that Donald Trump doesn't go far enough. And in some ways, of course, shooters, actors like the El Paso actor in his manifesto or apparent manifesto, make the claim that they're not just fulfilling the rhetoric that Donald Trump is putting out there. They're trying to push the administration to go further. They're saying, you're saying this is a crisis. If this is a crisis for white people, for a white country, and that's explicitly for white nationalists what they say, we need to go further. We need to expel people from this country. We need to maintain a white majority at all cost, and white here means in a genetic essence, and that's the message that they're sending. Donald Trump has consistently played to that audience, as well as to that audience of doctrinaire white nationalists, but also to a base that is perhaps not quite willing to say it that explicitly, but clearly supports the kinds of policies, Muslim ban and border wall and detention centers slash concentration camps slash family separation and emergency decrees, turning this, meaning the situation at the United States border, where we have people wanting to cross into this country for a variety of reasons, into some kind of existential crisis, turning those people who are trying to cross into enemies, calling them invaders. You don't call someone an invader unless you're trying to turn them into an enemy. That's what an invasion means. You don't invade a country to get jobs or to seek safety.
I want to actually play a video that has resurfaced online of Trump addressing supporters at a rally in Florida just a few months ago. And it made news at the time, but people are bringing it up again as a way to reiterate how Trump has signaled to his base over and over again that it's okay to dehumanize immigrants so much that you can kill them. This is Trump speaking at a rally in Florida's panhandle. You can't really hear it in this video, but someone in the audience shouts the words, shoot them, when Trump asked, well, what can you do about this immigration crisis? Here is that clip.
How do you stop these people? You can't. There's no... That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that statement. Only in the panhandle.
And that is Trump and his base making light of the fact that someone in the audience of one of his rallies in Florida recently said, shoot them, when he asked what we should do about the immigration crisis. Right behind him, Stephen, were, wholesome looking white Americans, young people and older, laughing and smiling at a joke about violence against immigrants. So, and of course, Trump just simply sort of brushed it off, saying only in the panhandle. What should he have said?
Well, I mean, how about that would be racist murder if we did that? And how about what are these other countries that he's talking about where they can get away with this kind of thing? It's certainly no place that we would want to emulate. Under international law, seeking to harm people who are trying to cross a border just to cross the border is clearly illegal and absolutely immoral.
Some people have suggested that it's not just, it's the availability of guns is a big problem in America, but really it's white supremacy, because when you get guns in the hands of white supremacists, you can have these deadly mass shootings that are driven by hate. But isn't it both? I mean, aren't these twin problems that are problematic in and of themselves and together create an even bigger problem?
Well, obviously, the United States has a problem with violence. This is clear whether you're talking about the kinds of politicized violence that you have with white nationalists or that you have with misogynists who are taking up arms for political purposes to try to make a point. Beyond that, of course, there's everyday violence, including the untold numbers of people who shoot themselves accidentally, shoot other people accidentally, as well as firearms used in the commission of crimes. That's a problem, but in terms of what Donald Trump is particularly responsible for at the moral level, it's inciting a particular kind of politicized violence, of making light of it, not just in that Florida campaign rally, but during his 2016 campaign, when he repeatedly suggested that it would be an okay thing for his followers and supporters to beat up protesters, said he would pay their legal bills, no problem. This is a great big joke. Praised a Montana politician who attacked a reporter. And has suggested that policing in the United States is too soft, and that we should take the gloves off and really hurt people, because that's the way, ironically speaking, on my part, that democracy should work. No, that's not the way democracy should work.
The forum 8chan that people that this particular shooter in El Paso posted his online manifesto to, there has been this place where people gather, and a lot of resentful young white men in particular seem attracted to. It was just dropped by the San Francisco tech company hosting them, but it just, you sort of wonder, well, why were they hosting them in the first place? Because a lot of people have been pointing out the problem of this forum for a while, and it seems as though there's always a tech company willing to make money off of hate. You know, why did they host them in the first place? Even the founder of 8chan has called for that group to be shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. And the cynical part of me, although I applaud the decision, and it was a very thoughtful statement that was put out by the company, nonetheless, I said, is the threshold then 2 mass shootings, mm-hmm. 3,
right.
4? How many do you have to have? And of course, I would like to say that, you know, I understand strident defense of free speech issues, but there is a line where people are advocating political violence, and not just advocating it, but racist political violence. But they're also using the platform as a platform of choice to post their manifestos, to live stream their and record their acts of extreme violence. This is something that should deeply disturb us, and the argument that they will just find someplace else, we'll let them, and then they should be shut down there as well. Wherever they want to go and hide, they should be shut down. We should make it as difficult within the law, within the First Amendment, as we can for these people to do, for white nationalists to organize in this way, or misogynists or anti-Semites or anti-Muslim bigots to organize and to promote this kind of political violence.
The Dayton shooter's motive is still being teased apart. He, had a similar sort of superficial approach to this, in that he was using a military style weapon. He was even wearing military style armor. It isn't quite clear whether he was targeting people of a certain race. The place that he targeted, his victims were multi-ethnic, included whites and non-whites. But it's now emerging that while he was in high school, he was suspended for creating a hit list and a rape list. Is misogyny often a common marker of these sorts of violent perpetrators?
It is, and there are numerous examples of individuals in the last few years, predating the Trump administration. All of this predates the Trump administration. I should say it simply accelerated. Who has explicitly committed mass murder on grounds of ideological misogyny. They hate women and they want to demonstrate it, and they hate men, or say they hate men, but hate here is the wrong word, actually. They may feel hate, but what they have is a political agenda to teach people lessons in the case of the misogynists. And in the case of the white nationalists, it's to really to try to force the state and the white people of the United States to take the situation that we're in with demographic change as an existential crisis, to see black and brown skinned others as enemies whom we should exclude from the country, deport from the country, and create ethnic havens for white people to preserve their civilization and genetic identity. This is what motivates them. It's not simply a feeling that they don't like these people. They're not trying to inspire other people to do the same. They're trying to point to a crisis as they see it. And the Trump policies and Trump rhetoric and beyond Trump in the echo chamber of right-wing media have done nothing but reinforce this message that we are in a crisis because of brown-skinned immigrants and Muslims coming to the United States.
And of course, Trump himself has made it very clear how he feels about the brown-skinned women that are serving in Congress, right? The newly appointed women in Congress. But he seems to have a longer record of sort of misogyny in general, but also racist misogyny. I mean, you look at his attacks on Maxine Waters, and then the latest attacks on members of the so-called squad, the 4 freshman congresswomen of color, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley. and you know, just days ago that he was allowing the chance of send her back to be said at a rally that he spoke at about Ilhan Omar. He claimed that he didn't like it and tried to shut it down. But if you actually watch the video, he just sort of silently watched and admired as he listened to his crowd chanting this racist chant. So that is a clear message to his followers, right? I mean, when your president spews this kind of hatred at immigrant women of color who are members of Congress, isn't it a green light for his followers to do the same?
Yes, it is. And this is what is referred to in the literature as scripted violence. This is where you have someone with a bully pulpit who is attacking people from groups that are already marginalized, against whom there is a history of systemic bigotry, and saying, look how awful they are. They're our enemies.
I mean, the gun manufacturer just recently put up a billboard of the four members of the squad, you know, essentially advertising gun sales alongside the faces of these four women as if he was literally putting a target on them.
Yeah, this is a kind of solicitation of violence. In Trump's case, it comes just shy of what would be legally actionable, but it is absolutely morally culpable. And I mean, one of the things with scripted violence is when you start putting out there that there are enemies who deserve to have violence inflicted in them, at least on them, at least by implication, you don't know where that's going to end up. Trump doesn't know where this is going to end up. No one does. What we can only say for sure that as long as the country is polarized, there's someone in the White House or close to the White House making these kinds of accusations that that Americans are enemies, that there's going to be people who act out violently on those. It's absolutely predictable.
And Trump just posted on Twitter a few days ago that he was going to direct his law enforcement, federal law enforcement agencies, to consider Antifa a domestic terror group, and said nothing about white supremacists. There have been a lot of people on the left in particular who proudly call themselves anti-fascist as a response to what they see as rising fascism that includes white supremacy under Trump. And Trump seems more interested in attacking those who attack fascism rather than fascism itself.
I mean, if you look at the situation that we're in, virtually all of the violence resulting in mass murder has come, that has been ideologically motivated, has come out of white nationalism, not from any other faction in the United States in the last couple of years. A few exceptions, if you go back a little bit further, but we're talking about a couple of instances, which of course should be taken seriously, versus dozens on the other side and hundreds of people injured. And this, until Trump's Monday speech, was really the most explicit condemnation of that violence that he has made, and still falls far short of taking the responsibility that I would like to see him take.
Right. It took 31 deaths to get him to this point. I mean, you know, the lawmakers who he has targeted have to have extra security. He, you know, any one of them could have violence visited upon them, and it ought to lie at his feet. I'm wondering what you make of Texas Congresswoman Veronica Escobar's comments. She's from El Paso, and she very explicitly called his racism out. She's visited the, you know, the border detention camps and has been one of his outspoken critics. She said that Trump was not welcome in El Paso. Is that the, I mean, let's talk about what is the most effective way to combat what he is doing and saying and unleashing upon us, because the rest of us aren't helpless, aren't powerless, even though we may feel that way. Is Escobar's language the kind of language we need to start seeing more of?
Well, yes, and I'd like to see it from Congress. I would like to see it from all of Congress, to hold not just President Trump, but the entire administration and its policies culpable, because it's not just the rhetoric, it's also the policies. It is, in fact, the detention centers and the family separation and the and the emergency decree, and the Muslim ban. It's all of this, as well as the changing of the disregard for the judiciary when it disagrees with them, and the attempt to rule by decree, and the praise for strong men overseas. It's all of a piece, and Congress needs to take seriously its oversight duties of the executive branch, the FBI, which needs to be much more active in pursuing those where they have probable cause for those pursuing political violence, the Department of Homeland Security and Border Patrol and ICE. All of these agencies need to be aggressively overseen by Congress that has ultimately control of the purse strings and must use that power. The rest of us need to act as citizen lobbyists, join citizen lobbying organizations, speak to our own representatives, get involved with our own immigrant support and anti-racist organizations in our towns and states.
I mean, the least Congress could do is take up the gun control measure. Even if they don't tackle Trump directly and his hate-filled rhetoric, the least they could do is take some action toward the access that these white supremacists have to weapons. There was a bill that easily passed the House requiring universal background checks that Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, has not even allowed a discussion and debate on the floor of the Senate. And now Democrats are calling on McConnell to reconvene a Senate session and take a break from his break. He's nursing a broken shoulder, I understand, or fracture, and vote on this bill at the very least. I mean, even if you are too scared to tackle Trump's racism and rhetoric, at least do something about the weapons that get into the hands of his supporters and everyone else, right?
Well, I mean, the lack of courage from congressional leadership, and I will call out both parties, but Senator McConnell in particular is in a position to do better, and he's not doing it. Instead, he's protecting the president from his own initiative. So the other day, very briefly, Sunday, I think, the president said maybe we should look at background checks. And Senator McConnell says it's a non-starter. He's not going to let this happen. And it's clear that it's because of right-wing lobbies in the gun industry and supporters of so-called gun rights. They're putting tremendous pressure there. And this is a big constituency. It's along with, of course, the anti-immigrant movement is a big constituency for the president. And I will, if he continues with the rhetoric that he had Monday, if Trump does, I will be surprised. I think this is a one-off. He read a script. When he goes back to campaigning, he's not going to be talking about white supremacists. He's going to be talking about those invaders crossing the border again.
Right. And then there will be another shooting and another shooting and another shooting. Democrats have indicated support for impeachment. I mean, set aside the special counsel report and all of that. If we have a president that's essentially inciting violence, at the very least, that is an impeachable offense. It doesn't have to be a criminal charge, but the House certainly can start articles of impeachment just based on the conduct of a president. And there are a majority of Democrats that have signed on to impeachment right now, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi still considers that a non-starter. And one wonders how many people have to die because of Trump's, of the violence he's inspiring before Pelosi thinks that it's important to impeach this president. Whether or not impeachment succeeds or whoever replaces him, having some response is important, right? Some political response to this president to censure him.
Well, I mean, clearly, the president is morally culpable, and there are clearly moral grounds for action from Congress. Unfortunately, I think even if some sort of impeachment went forward, it would probably not be drawn up on the issues that actually really matter around right. Nationalism and the border and the destructive policies and the violent rhetoric. It would be on some narrow technical grounds that I don't want to see a president lying and obstructing justice, but those are the least of the president's offenses against the people of the United States and against democracy.
Where can people find out more about the work that you do, Stephen?
Well, they can go to www.politicalresearch.org and search for any topic that they might be interested in as it relates to looking at the corrosive influence of a broad spectrum of the far right in the United States and anti-democratic movements in the United States.
That's politicalresearch.org. We link to that. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Stephen Gardiner is an assistant research director at Political Research Associates. We've been discussing the back-to-back mass shootings in Texas and Ohio and Trump's role in them. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.